episode of the Streaking the Line podcast. Once again, I'm back. It's Pierce, but Zach's still here. Zach, how are you?
I'm exhausted, Pierce.
I'm also exhausted.
I am happy to no longer be hosting this podcast.
Yeah, that was exhausting work.
That was a tough couple of days for me, for the audience, for Caroline and Paul. Thank you all for bearing with me, and I will hand it back to Pierce now.
Yeah, big thanks to Paul and Caroline for jumping on. But we have Ben back to our normal trio. Ben, how are you?
Bursting, thriving, full of energy, ready to talk about what could be Virginia's final game of the season.
All right, we'll get to that, but certainly a lot to share about the tournament in Greensboro, and a lot to talk about the who's in those three games and how it compares to what we might see coming up in the national tournament. I think overall it's sort of hard to judge the vibes because everyone was pretty disappointed with the at least offensive performance against Duke, but hard not to be happy with making it to the conference title game, and certainly hard not to be happy with the performance of the team in the first two games, particularly with the context of the Vanderplas injury. So a lot to discuss, but let's start with game one and talk about that game against UNC. I know you covered some of this with Paul and Caroline, of course, Zach, but if we want to give it just in the frame of those three games, I think the UNC game does a good job of giving a bookend with the Duke game because it was so cathartic for the team to shake off a lot of the negativity, a lot of the doom and gloom going into it. Some of that, of course, is because of the Vanderplas news. And so we're in Greensboro. We're at the, the official UVA pregame thing. It was like I was at a wake. I mean, it was there were smiles, but there was not strong energy vibes because everyone was talking about, of course, you had another injury in the postseason for this team that seems to collect those. Of course, it's against UNC, who just handled them, a few weeks prior. Of course, now it's the Virginia postseason haunting doom and gloom that tends to be the cynical fan base's take on it. But the Hoos pulled out, an energetic, strong performance in for the most part, and sent Carolina packing in a place that was filled with Tar Heels. Certainly louder for the local UNC team, and it's a desperate UNC team that knew it needed to get another win over Virginia to be on the right side of the bubble and wanting to avoid the embarrassment that they clearly did not avoid and clearly are dealing. We could talk for probably an hour about what they're dealing with, and I don't want to because Carolina sucks. Let me just say, the highs of that were greater than the lows of the Duke game for me. If we're going for a total, had they played like they played against Duke Thursday night and lost, every conversation we have going into this national tournament is different. And they didn't. So here's some optimism to start things off for you before we get into anything about Furman and the bracket, Ben. When you look at those three games on a whole, you haven't been on to be able to chime in. If we're adding up all the plus and minuses of all three games, how high did we start with the Carolina performance?
Yeah, I overall definitely came away feeling a lot more positive about the Cavaliers after the ACC tournament than I did after that really shaky end to the regular season. And a big part of that was the performance against North Carolina, because right out of the gate, they had a lot of the issues that we've talked about, the slow starts, the poor shooting, just not being able to hit anything. They had 11 points 12 minutes into the game, which is seemingly par for the course for this team now because the same thing happened against Duke. Right. But overall, I remember even at the beginning of that Carolina game, Virginia just looked like they were playing much better basketball, especially in stark contrast to that first North Carolina game, which is so – or sorry, the second one of the regular season, the recent one that's so fresh in our minds, where they went to Chapel Hill and just sort of got smacked around for 40 minutes. in a game where I felt like North Carolina really controlled the action, even when Virginia wasn't winning this game at the beginning. Like, North Carolina led for probably the first 10, 15 minutes-ish, but Virginia felt like they had control of the way the game was being played the whole time. And I think what happened to North Carolina in that game almost resembled what happened to Virginia in the championship game against Duke, where, like, yeah, they were losing. They were probably being outplayed on both ends of the floor, but they also couldn't buy a basket at all, which sort of has been the story of Carolina's season. I mean, Caleb Love finishing the season with a 3-for-15 shooting performance, very ugly. RJ Davis, the only guy who could do anything all game, trying to get into that mid post, hit those little mid range fadeaways, knock down some threes, but like they really just never looked like the better team. And it was good to see Virginia put on a complete performance against a team that might not be going to the NCAA tournament, but was one of the best teams in the field. And really, like, they beat Virginia pretty badly late in the regular season. So I think that performance, especially as you mentioned, with the sort of chaos that was the Vanderplas injury news coming out just hours before the game, like, I think it sort of steadied the team. And it was a really encouraging performance that I think sort of set the tone for what was an encouraging ACC tournament.
I think the energy you saw on the defensive end continued through all three games, and that's something that, you know, we expect good defense for sure, but it's nice to see them playing a little bit more elevated and as a unit. Maybe some of that is Shedrick's emergence. So I know, Zach, you covered certainly plenty of this in last week's episodes, but, you know, to reiterate, a silver lining to an injury is maybe Shed's out of the doghouse. I don't know. What do you think that we go from here with Caden?
Yeah, I mean, I think Ben's injury, absolutely unfortunate, devastating, such, like, just a shame for him. But it has forced Tony's hand to play Caden. And I think that's sort of one thing that I know I was definitely saying, and I think others were saying as well, as Caden wasn't playing, as he was struggling, was he just need time. He just needs time on the floor. Like, he just needed you have to play. You're playing. You're not coming out if you make a bunch of mistakes. Just go in there and play loose and do your best. And we saw sort of the result of that against North Carolina. He played 19 minutes, did have four fouls, but played with four fouls for 6 minutes late in the game, had five blocks, was fine on offense, 2 or 3 from the field for 4 points, only had one rebound, which is weird, and he amended that against Clemson a bit. But, you know, I think he just provided you that backline presence that they haven't really had without him. And moving forward, I mean, we'll get into the Furman matchup and sort of the role that he could play in that game, but he does give you, if he's not sort of, you know, if he doesn't get hit in the head too many times and doesn't sort of slip into that sloppy, just sort of silly foul play that he can and has at times this season, then he just sets a decent floor for this defense. Like, it just means sort of like, okay, we know that we have him on the backside. We know that he can help disrupt ball screens. He's not going to make stuff easy for other teams' bigs. Mm-hmm. And he's just going to allow us to sort of like, and with Poppy as well, like, Poppy deserves credit. He was playing before Ben got hurt, but he's still producing and playing, not like, he's playing 13 minutes a game against UNC and looking perfectly capable out there. Yeah, he has three fouls. He only has 4 points, but that's all you can really ask of him. And so I think that Caden's emergence is absolutely massive for this team, even if it's not sort of, I think we started the year saying, okay, can Caden Shedrick be a 30 minute per game center in the ACC? Like, is he going to have this breakout season? Mm-hmm. Obviously he hasn't. If he can play 20 minutes for you right now, though, that's big. And I think that, you know, it's really encouraging to get him back on track and confident, because this is a guy who, like, everybody needs confidence, but I think seeing a confident Caden Shedrick is a really huge development. And yeah, it just makes UVA's life easier in a lot of ways. He's a good screener in mover blocker, especially. I mean, we saw him take a three in the triangle offense, which is probably
he needed to take that shot.
Yeah, like, someone that needed. Yeah. But yeah, I think you can't be anything but happy, and not to, like, sort of look to the offseason too much, but, like, and I haven't heard anything about sort of a Caden transfer or whatever, but, like, that was definitely sort of something that you had to consider when he was didn't play in the last two regular season sure. games. Now he plays heavy minutes in three ACC tournament games and is set to do that in the NCAA tournament and sort of have to rethink this. Like, okay, this might mean that Caden is coming back, whereas he was definitely at risk of leaving before. So have to be encouraged, have to feel good about that. He there's no sort of like true big on Furman that he necessarily like needs to guard or needs to match up against, but his presence against a small team and Furman whose tallest player is 6'9" and like 195 pounds or whatever is going to be valuable mm-hmm. and could definitely be something that dictates how that game goes.
Gosh, wouldn't it be nice to like force the issue, you know, and yeah. like use their size to their advantage. Well, we'll get into that in a minute, but you know, the other side of that coin, of course, is in the Duke game, the reasons they were going to miss Vanderplas became hugely apparent. And you can see it comparing to the Duke game and the JPJ and what Vanderplas brought. And then, of course, what was missing, you know, not being able to stretch the defense more away from the paint, Duke's defense more away from the paint, but also not being able to guard the stretch that Duke does, I think showed up in that 4 or 5 spot massively. That was sort of the conversation on the ground, right, amongst fans, was like, well, Vanderplas hasn't been hitting his shots so much recently, maybe this is a blessing in disguise. I was like, no. Like, you know, they answered the bell for sure, but this team is better when Vanderplas is on it. And I think you saw that clear example. Again, this isn't anti-Caden at all. I lost my voice, I think, cheering for Caden specifically against UNC. It's just, you see, you know, every bit helps with this team when if everybody's healthy. And we're going to need Caden and Poppy to answer the bell again this upcoming week. I don't know that they're going to run into the situation that is Duke-like, you know what I mean? We can get into that bracket in a little bit to get some preview, but let's keep talking about Greensboro a little bit more. And say, Ben, you know, when you compare those three games, we haven't mentioned the Clemson game too much. Are there aspects of the Clemson game that, even if it's a continuation that we saw through all three, that makes you hopeful or more worried? Take this in either direction.
Yeah, Clemson was encouraging, I thought. I think the offense looked as smooth against Clemson as it has in a long time. And they still did not start knocking down the threes at the clip that we want them to. I think it's been like 15 games. If it's going to happen, it'll be a surprise. It's not something that we can be counting on, is for this team to just go out like they did against Baylor, hit 5 or 6 threes and finish someone off. Part of that is the team being cold. Part of that is the absence of Ben Vanderplas, who was crucial to that good 3-point shooting run, even for as poor as he's been during like the back half of the season. But against Clemson, I think you saw a lot of what Virginia's offense looks like at its best. It's Kihei Clark and Reese Beekman making plays for others, but it's also like Jaden Gardner and Armon Franklin sort of getting it going in the two-man game. I remember seeing some passes from them in that game that were like, I didn't know they could do that. but like, it just looked very wide open and very impressive against Clemson. And then defensively, again, Clemson didn't make many shots. Some of them were open and just Clemson missing. Some of them were well contested. And like Clemson, we've been sort of saying, at least Zach and I'm not going to stick Pierce to any hot takes, but we've been calling Clemson sort of frauds all season. And I think it sort of showed up in that game. Like, they just did not have the horses to hang with Virginia when Virginia was getting open layups, wide open 12 footers every time down the court. And Clemson was having to settle for these tough threes. Mm-hmm. It was a impressive performance. I am not sure how good Clemson is, so I'm like trying to avoid reading too much into it, but it was really, really good to watch that game and just see them steamroll a team that for as bad as like the predictive metrics may say they are, was still very good in ACC play, was 14-6. And like, it was the ACC tournament semifinal, winning those by 20. Like, that doesn't happen very often. So overall, I think Clemson and UNC were both encouraging performances in different ways. UNC sort of exercising a demon, Clemson sort of going out and really just stomping on an opponent that you expect to beat handily, but maybe didn't expect to just control the game from start to finish the way Virginia did.
Yeah, I think, I mean, the offensive performance and the, you know, 18 assists as a team, shooting 50% from the floor, you know, those are things where we're going, okay, if we keep up this elite level defense, that's more than enough to beat teams, you know, around our level. Like, you know, I don't want to get ahead of ourselves and talk about like playing Alabama or, you know, if they had been in the side of the bracket, I feel like, you know, there's no chance against a team like Kansas necessarily. I could be wrong, but you know, with UVA, I think you're saying if you're in that like top 15, top 25 range of teams, UVA can handle that when they play their defense and score enough of a efficient offense that unfortunately they hadn't been doing in this recent sort of swoon of close games against inferior competition, et cetera, et cetera. Before I ask you about Clemson, Zach, let me just say that I walked away from the arena having a very different opinion of the Clemson basketball program and its players than I'd ever really had before, which was I didn't really think about them, and I would, I guess, root for them to beat the teams I don't like. But man, I was at the JPJ game. You know, I've been at a ton of Clemson games, but I maybe it's some backs against the wall issue. Like maybe because Clemson knew they needed that W. But I was like, who are these punks? Like I thought they were playing dirty. I thought they were chirping when they were down 15. I know that's Hunter Tyson's whole shtick, but it wasn't just him. And at least he was hitting some shots for them. So maybe he earns a little bit of right to do so, except, I mean, you're still getting your ass beat. So I don't know. Anyway, I walked out of that being like, man, I'm glad you guys are going to miss the tournament. I hope you cry yourselves to sleep at home or the NIT if you accept that invitation. I assume they did. Because they're not frauds like UNC who think they're too good. Anyway, I just walked out of that going, like, I don't know if it was a Brownell thing or the guys that got going, but, you know, I remember liking, like, the Amir Sims teams, you know, recently for Clemson. So I was totally unimpressed with their performance in the sportsmanship category in addition to the being good at basketball category.
They're just not gentlemen. They're not Virginia gentlemen. It comes down to it. Brownell was being, he was in like the way that they were screaming about moving picks is just like, it's silly to me because in off-ball screening in college basketball, nobody is ever actually set like with their feet not moving. Like it's sort of like unless you're making an obvious action to like move an appendage to get into the way, it's not a moving pick. Like unless it's Poppy like putting his shoulder into someone or like moving his left hip out to bump someone, it's not really a moving pick as long as they're like relatively set. And the way that like Chase Hunter was just like running into the screen, the pin downs in mover it was just like, what are you like, what is this? Like you're really like, well,
clearly being that soft to do so.
That you can't exactly and that's why Brownell, he was like, run into them and then I'm gonna scream at the refs when they don't call a moving screen. And it's like, well, you're really that soft that you can't actually defend because they saw what mover blocker did to them 2 weeks ago or whatever. Mm-hmm. And they're like, well, we obviously have no solution to this simple off to beating this simple offense against this personnel. So we're just going to cry for calls. Whatever. Clemson or front. That being said, Jaden this game, man, like that dude was cooking, you know, 23 points. 10 for 15 from the floor, 12 rebounds. I thought he was really good defensively against UNC, similarly so, but maybe not to the same degree against Clemson. Him and the way him and Armon worked, and they also went to that sort of inside triangle again, like even without Vanderplas. And I think just because of how well that Armon and Jaden were working inside and sort of hitting from the mid-range and getting to the rim and the way that Kihei was playing as a passer and Reese was as well, it worked for them. And Clemson, you know, for as capable of a team as they are, they're not disciplined on defense, sort of as I just alluded to with their whole running into pin down screens. Like they're just, that's sort of not the team that they are. They want to take shots and like beat you with PJ Hall and Hunter Tyson on offense. And then defensively, they just kind of want to like use their physicality, but they're not really a defensively, they're just not smart on defense. And I think that UVA exploited that to a great extent. and the experience really sort of showed on offense, and sort of like the way that they were to wear Clemson down in sides, and then just sort of used simple little actions to completely boggle them, was really impressive. It's hard to sort of like replicate that game to game against when you go from playing a Clemson type defense to a Duke type defense, which even though that they're all young and whatever, just the raw talent that Duke has, and I know we'll talk about Duke, but I think that you sort of saw what UVA can do against a solid, maybe sort of like, I think you could make the argument that they're not a tournament team, but they're like, they're around the same level as a Furman, if not better. You know what I mean? Like probably they are better than Furman. And so you saw what UVA can do against an undisciplined defense that doesn't really have the guys with the right IQ. They might have the offensive talent, but they don't really have that sort of it factor defensively. And UVA just completely exploited them, even without making shots, just because of how uniquely talented they are and also just how uniquely experienced they are by now, especially playing together. We saw that continuity from last season carry through. We saw the Italy trip in this game. We saw this entire season where they know where the shots are and they found them, and Clemson really couldn't do much about it.
Yeah, and you saw it not work against Duke, right? And a lot of that is because of what Duke brings. I mean, I gotta disagree with what Paul said last week. I think Shire's done a great job coaching. I think it's been like a noticeable growth in this team and growth in what they try and do, you know, like the actual X's and O's. So, you know, Duke beat them, but Virginia, if you go 6 for 17, which isn't good, instead of 4 for 17 from three, it's a tie game late, you know, like Virginia easily still could have won,
which is
game.
What they shot against Clemson. Like,
right.
They were, yeah, like...
exactly. Right. So like, you know, Virginia's defense still kept them in this game against the quote unquote, you know, the hottest team in the country or whatever the ESPN saying for 30 minutes every hour about Duke. Like it's almost more disappointing because they still could have won instead of just like being completely outplayed by a team of five-star guys. Right. And we're used to that. Like we're used to losing close games against teams with great talent. I just think it speaks to that Virginia, the wheels haven't fallen off. However, the guard offensive performance was abysmal. And a lot of that is because it's a different level of defense that they're going against. A lot of it was they couldn't score in the paint because you're going against 2 7-footers and you're not hitting shots that are going to stretch them away. So it's sort of like the writing's on the wall. What are you going to do? Get what you can. And it wasn't a lot. I mean, that little slip screen into the paint that they do pretty successfully was what I think Ryan Dunn caught one successfully. You know, he was 1 for 1, but the other guys were 0 for. And I'm not, you know, dogging on them. It's just like that they knew it was coming. Duke was well prepared for what Virginia threw at them. And when they got to an open shot, they couldn't convert. So obviously we want them to do better there. But like I said, you're not going to get a lot of teams like that, even in the rest of the tournament. So I don't know, Ben, what, you know, hopefully there's light at the end of the tunnel for these guards. I think a lot of negativity about Kihei, certainly deserved a lot of that negativity on the offensive side of things, but he wasn't alone in that Duke performance for being a frustrating shooter.
Yeah, I think the Duke performance, I think you make a good point about John Shire too, who to an extent is sort of playing basketball in easy mode. Like Duke just has better players than just about anyone in the country, certainly anyone else in the ACC. But at the same time, having watched that team early in the season, even when they were playing their good basketball against teams like Xavier in the preseason tournaments, like they didn't look like this. They didn't guard like this. And like part of it is the length. Like it's really, really hard not to have a good defense if you can put Derek Lively and Kyle Filipowski in the paint. An issue that, again, as we've talked about, was only exacerbated by the fact that you can't put Ben Vanderplas out there anymore to pull them out of the paint. So you have no stretch four, you have no stretch five, and you're going to be driving into 6'11 guys with, or 6'11, 7 foot guys with monster wingspans every time you try to get the ball to the basket. And you could see the length really, really bother Kihei, but also like even Reese Beekman, like everyone on Virginia. I mean, Armon tried to throw a few passes that were getting tipped, and it was like uncharacteristic Virginia turnovers too. It was horizontal passes getting picked, getting deflected, and stuff that I think poses the question of, is Virginia having a problem with this now, or did they just run into one of the three most athletic defenses in college basketball? And I tend to lean towards the second one. If Virginia, again, not to get ahead of ourselves, Alabama is the only team in their region that even defends remotely close to that, I would say. Like, there are just not many teams like Duke in college basketball. And I think Duke gave it their best shot in that game. That was a game that I left feeling not that Virginia had played poorly, but that Duke had just played really well. And when both teams play well, like Virginia was playing at that point, it sort of comes down to who makes shots. I mean, there was that really big moment with about 4 minutes left where Virginia just gets that wide open transition three for Kihei, has time to set his feet, dribble into it, take a minute, take a breath, check his feet, and still just brick back iron.
Just missed it.
And it was just that game for Virginia. In the moment, I remember feeling pretty frustrated with the offense because it just looked so gummed up after playing Clemson. But I think that's just the way everyone is going to look against that Duke team. We'll see if Max Asemus and that 7'5" guy can do something to them in the first round, because who knows, maybe if you can shoot from 35 feet, having two rim protectors doesn't matter. But I was really impressed by Duke and much less negative about Virginia after that game than I was positive about the first two games.
Yeah, you know, it's well put. I think, again, it's just so frustrating because, like, they could have just shot sort of bad instead of really bad and won the game, you know?
Yeah.
But maybe that is a reason for optimism because, you know, Furman does not have 2 7-footers clogging the paint. They don't have Jeremy Roach. I, you know, not to be all Mr. Positivity about Duke, but
Going on right now? I'm sitting over here like,
I just think they're really good, and so that's why I'm not like despondent over this inability to beat them, because, you know, I was still overall impressed with Virginia's performance in Greensboro. Roach was the best player on the floor, but like easy, and I thought that when they beat Duke in the JPJ too, you know. So like, If you have a guy like Jeremy Roach leading a guy, a senior leading a bunch of five-star monsters, it's gonna be hard to beat. So who knows? Maybe Virginia will get a rematch against.
Kihei couldn't handle Roach.
Exactly.
And that's two games in a row. Reese shut down Proctor, which was a key. Like, because Proctor had been playing very well.
Yeah.
And you sort of thought to yourself, if Proctor's going off and they don't hold Filipowski to 0 points, I still thought they played well against Filipowski. Yeah, he had 20 points, but he was 8 for 17 and 1 for 5 from three. Mm-hmm. So you didn't make it easy on him. But Roach, and this is something that we're going to talk about in Furman, if Kihei can't handle the other team's smallest guard or lead guard, that's going to be a problem. And I'm not saying take him off the floor. I love Kihei. He's a fantastic player, but that was a tough game for him. And it's if he gets beat like that defensively, and Roach is a great player, like he deserves credit, like he had a size mismatch like he's never had before and he took full advantage of it. But yeah, that was really hard to watch him just consistently come down the floor and beat Kihei individually.
Well, I don't think Furman has a Kihei, but before, let me get one last word in. Shout out Isaac McNeely and Ryan Dunn for their overall performances in Greensboro. Really good to see. You brought Isaac in against Duke and you go, okay, so we got it. Come on, man. Come on. And he answered the bell, I think, you know, keep the Hoos in the game. So obviously good things coming for both of those freshmen. So yeah, let's talk Furman. Ben, I'm gonna toss it to you just for time's sake. The Paladins, a trendy upset pick on the social media. I think for a long time, any team that plays UVA in the first round is gonna be a trendy upset pick. But you know, what do you see in this matchup?
All right, so I am absolutely gonna eat my words on this.
Yeah, we're going
come Friday hashtag, morning.
No jinx.
I have been on social media, like, just seeing these articles, seeing today The Athletic did a piece about the top 10 upsets coming out. I got an email from the New York Times that was telling me to go read that article. I clicked on it. Number one, Virginia Furman. I'm looking, like, all around. Everyone seems to be picking this Furman team to upset Virginia. I do not see it. I think Virginia is going to whack them. I think the line is way too close. I think Virginia probably wins by double digits.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so interesting. I feel like the national consensus has just lagged on Virginia by a few weeks for whatever reason. Like, we were sounding the alarm bells when they were getting, like, barely squeaking by Notre Dame, barely mm-hmm. squeaking by Louisville, and they just kept moving up in the AP poll over and over. And then they go on that little run of playing like garbage. And it feels like everyone's finally caught up and been like, oh, guys, look at this. Virginia's struggling. Look, they lost to North Carolina. They lost to Boston College by 15. Are we sure this team's good? But I feel like they've, like, turned the corner again. Like, with that ACC tournament play, I was really encouraged by what I saw down in Greensboro. And the truth is also that Virginia got pretty lucky with their draw here against Furman. There are a lot of sort of landmines sitting in the 12-13 range.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I know I'm going to be eating my words on this when Jalen Slauson scores 25 points and they're moving on to the second round of the NCAA tournament. Like, this is a team that's like in the 80s or the 90s in the predictive metrics. There are teams in this, like Oral Roberts, Dukestra is in like the 50s and the 60s. Teams like Drake. There are legitimate teams on the 12-13 line that are really scary this year. I don't think Furman is one of them. I was watching the Southern Conference Championship this morning just mm-hmm. to sort of get a feel for how they played. I think it's a style of offense. And offense is going to be, if Furman wins, it'll be because of their offense. Again, on KenPom, they're 33rd in offensive efficiency, 183rd in defensive efficiency. They have a lot of talent. They have Jalen Slauson, who's kind of their big forward, sort of a guy who doesn't have the ball in his hands all that much, but when he does have the ball in his hands, he's very, very good with it. He's a good decision maker. He's a streaky shooter who is at 39% on the season. Half the time he gets out there, he's not really looking at the basket, though, which is a little funky. But if he hits one or two of them, look out. And then they also have Mike Bothwell as their other big player, number three, Hewlett scored 18 points per game, number one in the Southern Conference in scoring. He is a guy who has the ball in his hands all the time. Like, it'll just be high pick and roll with him if they get stuck. And there are other players that I will let you guys talk about, but I wanted to talk a little more about the system, which is sort of, they put five guys on the floor who can all shoot the ball at least a little bit, and they'll go four out, one in. They'll run a lot of motion. Guys are cutting all the time. Guys are moving all the time. And it's an offense that really encourages players to get shots up, which in a sense is scary for Virginia because that's the mm-hmm. sort of upset conducive, like, atmosphere. That's the style of play that allows you to get hot and take a team down. It's also a style of offense that I think Virginia's defense is very, very well suited to defend. I think Furman is going to have a rough time against this Virginia team because watching them play, it's just going to be such a step up in competition against a legit defense. I almost, watching Furman play 7-seed Chattanooga in the Southern Conference Championship, I feel like the difference between that and playing Virginia in the first round is going to look a lot like when Virginia played Clemson, and we were like, oh my goodness, everything is so wide open. Why haven't they been passing like this, getting these open looks all season long? And then we went and played Duke, and it was a real defense. And all of a sudden, everything got gummed up. Everything got stuck. It was tough late shot clock shots, some shots off the dribble. I think it's going to be a lot of that for Furman in the early going. Again, Virginia has had their own struggles against UNC and against Duke. They had 11 points 12 minutes into the game. But I think Furman is going to sort of take some time to adapt to playing against a defense that is as good as Virginia's. They really haven't faced anything like it all season long. And I think that's enough for Virginia in the first round. Offensively, they also match up well. Other people have pointed this out before me, but size-wise, Furman has nobody. Uh-huh. Hopefully, as Pierce mentioned earlier, we can get Shedrick to just sort of take it to them inside, maybe some Caparo minutes. But even beyond those two guys, because I think expecting them to dominate is a little bit of a jump, Jaden Gardner, like, this is the Jaden Gardner game. If he was going to have his tournament performance, put up 26-11. I mean, this is his chance to do it. I think Virginia matches up well with Furman. Bothwell's the leading scorer in the conference for a reason. He can make shots off the dribble. And Slauson is scary, especially given Virginia's willingness to go small. Because if Virginia does go small, I can see Slauson giving them some trouble. He's also a very good passer, and I think he'll be successful against double teams, which Virginia loves to send at guys in the post. Mm-hmm. They'll put him at the four. They'll run actions off him. Furman's good. They're experienced. They're well coached. They have not played a team that is defensively at Virginia's level. So if they aren't hitting self-created shots off the dribble, I think Virginia wins this one pretty easily.
Echoing a lot of what I'll say, Jay Billis was saying, why are people picking this upset? Like, it was like Reese Hickman's going to have his way with Furman. So, I mean, it makes a lot of sense to me, too. I've watched that them play the mocks. And yeah, that it's just going to be a different level. Thanks for getting one last dig at Clemson out there, because they deserve it. They're garbage. Zach, you know, you continuing this conversation. Is there somebody, we already mentioned Gardner. So who's somebody else that should be able to hopefully feast?
Yeah. I'm trying to think. Like, I think Furman, they're not that disciplined on defense. And this is sort of what we talked about with Clemson, is in that I don't think that they have some good defensive players. Slauson was the defensive player of the year in the SoCon last year, and then was second in voting this year. I don't totally buy that. I think he's just athletic for the SoCon. I think that he thinks that he's Caden Shedrick and he's not 6'11 and doesn't have those type of hops. So I think that sometimes you can exploit his over aggression.
Those alley oops might actually be converted instead of like the Duke game where Lively was just like, get that away. Silly Virginia.
I think UVA's just general offense. I think if there's, Ben made a good point on Gardner, if there's one guy who's going to go off in this game, it's Jaden. Otherwise, I think that it's sort of going to be more of that team wide. If they play well on offense, it's going to be more of that team wide domination that we saw against Clemson. I think that I get the whole sort of Furman. I get to some degree the sort of awe of Furman as a potential upset team, because they take a lot of threes. Like, they're 13th in the country in 3-point rate, or in 3-pointers taken per field goal attempts taken. Mm-hmm. So I get that. They have guys who are willing to put shots up. JP Pegues is a guy who I kind of, as their point guard, he worries me in that sort of Jeremy Roach type of role. He's not Jeremy Roach. He's not that good of a player. But I think that at 6'1", 180, he shoots 33.9% from three on the year and 174 total attempts. I think that he could get going against Kihei. I think that's sort of the worry. I trust Reese to guard Bothwell, even though Bothwell is sort of a physical player. I think that he can match up well. And then I think against Slauson that they have enough guys defensively that they can switch. They can throw Ryan Dunn at him. They can throw Shedrick at him. They can throw Gardner at him. And I think that they can be successful there. I mean, for a little bit more on sort of Furman's resume, they are 0-2 in quad one games, 1-0 in their one quad two game, which was at UNC Greensboro. 9-3 in quad three and 12-2 in quad four. So they've played three games in quad one and two.
Yeah.
They're not tested. They lost to the Citadel not even a month ago.
Yeah.
On the road, but come on. Like, they lost to the Citadel. They lost to Old Dominion earlier in the year. They lost to Western Carolina relatively recently. And they've won something like 14 out of their last 15 games. But the toughest team that they played in that stretch was UNC Greensboro, who's on KenPom 116th, on the net they're 114th. So as Ben sort of alluded to, they haven't faced this type of UVA team. The ability is there in offense. They have the guys that can hit shots and that can get hot. But just about everybody in this tournament can get hot. Like, that's just sort of the reality of the NCAA tournament. That's how upsets happen. Right. You know, everybody has a Mike Bothwell. Everybody has a JP Pegues, like Pete Pegues. And so I think that, as Ben said, I think they're incredibly beatable. Caroline sort of said this earlier today to me when she gave me a ride to the Tony Bennett presser. If UVA just takes tons of long twos and Furman gets hot from three, then Furman will win. But if UVA sort of plays their style of basketball, I agree. I think that I would, if I was 21 and I wanted to bet, I would take UVA with the 5.5 that DraftKings opened with.
you can't bet on UVA in Virginia.
Oh, sorry.
But, you know,
and if I lived in Pennsylvania, yeah.
I think we're not going to see, hopefully we're not going to see the turnover bug like we would against Duke, for all the
Yeah.
reasons that we already discussed. Furman is not a great defensive team, and they don't have the like the Duke does. You keep over you keep care of the ball, and also force your own turnovers, which UVA is apt at doing, and score points out of those turnovers. It really doesn't hopefully matter if they still only shoot 28% from three.
Yeah.
Best case scenario, of course, is that they find their shooting stroke. They play a mediocre defense and start hitting some open threes, which you sort of saw against Clemson. So maybe we'll see something similar there. But I agree. I'm confident. Like, yeah, I've said every time I'm able to on this podcast for however long I've been doing it, UVA can lose any game for sure. But I don't think they're going to lose this one. I think there's a lot of reasons for UVA fans to be confident.
I also think this isn't, not having Ben Vanderplas will always hurt this team to some degree. This isn't the type of game where his absence is as missed as it was against Duke. And obviously, there's not a lot of teams where they have the length to make sort of that absence be missed. But I think that against Furman, you love the idea of playing Ryan Dunn and Caden Chadwick a lot of minutes. Like, you love the idea of having those athletic bigs in the front court playing. If there's a game to start Ryan Dunn, it's this game. Like, I think that being able to, or sort of having to rely on those players is exactly what you'd want against Furman. And so, and they don't really have many guys that come off the bench. They're in bench minutes. They're 26.2%, which is 285th on KenPom.
So
They're
get
not,
in the lane. Like, even if they're not shooting, just attack.
right.
Attack.
And they're not very tall. Like,
Right.
average height, they're 257th in the country. And they start, Garrett Keane, I think is how you pronounce his name, is 6'9". But as I said before, he's not 195 pounds. He's 215, but he's still very skinny. He can make plays, but they don't have that size. And yes, they're the number one 2-point shooting percentage team in the country, but that's just because they don't take a lot of twos, and the twos that they take are layups. Like, they're a very sort of analytical team, and it makes sense. They take a lot of threes, they take a lot of layups, they don't take many twos. Bothwell, who hits 50% on mid-range shots, is the only guy who really takes many of them. Slauson does too, but those are sort of, he's not very good at it. And so I think if Reese can do what Reese does against another team's best scorer, if Kihei can contain Pegues, I've heard broadcasters or announcers call him like three different things in the three games that I've watched. And then you can just prevent Slauson from, as Ben said, having 25 points, and you can throw different guys at him, which is what Tony said that they're going to try to do. Then I think that this is a UVA win. Like, there's really, Marcus Foster is their other starting guard. He's 6'4". He's physical. He can get into the lane, but I think Armon matches up well with him. Yeah, I think sort of the only real mismatch that they have is Pegues on Clark. And I think that you trust Kihei in this scenario to sort of say, get underneath him, frustrate him. The rest of the defense is here to help you, and we can sort of stunt them at the point of attack. Yeah, if Heen gets hot at the five and is popping out, that could be a problem. But then you just throw Ryan Dunn in the game as sort of your small ball five defensively, and you say, okay, guard him on the perimeter. They're really only three bench players are Alex Williams, who's a 6'5" guard, sort of a bit of a bruiser, can give you some physicality, can get on the offensive boards. Tyrese Huey, sort of a, if there's one guy who could stop Gardner, it's Huey, because he's 6'6", he's 220, he's got some bulk to him. And I think that he could potentially sort of give Jaden a little bit of some issues, but at the same time, he then takes away from what they want to do on offense because he's not really much of a shooter. 16 for 44 on the season. Okay, that's 36%, but not on high volume. And then Carter Witt, who UVA fans will remember UVA recruited a little while ago, and then he went to Wake Forest as a point guard before transferring to Furman. He can make some plays, but you're not really worried about him. And that's
No.
essentially their rotation. They have Ben Vanderwall, 6'7", 210
Well, that's
forward.
cheating.
Yeah.
We can't have our Vanderplas, Ben Vanderplas, be hurt, and you get to use a Ben Vanderwall.
Exactly. No, but yeah, I
All
don't
right.
know. I'm not worried about this team. If they get hot, they get hot, but
And you mentioned Armand, and that is something I want to make sure to throw out there. Armand getting into the paint is something that I think we saw work really well and sort of makes you go, okay, if the threes, he still needs to take a few of those threes, but if they're not falling, he's shown himself very capable and very successful when being aggressive, like getting those foul calls, finishing at the rim, like finding ways to score, be your team's leading scorer, even if you've grown a little cold from 3-point range. Well, it's the perfect team to try and do that against. So
Yeah, I
hopefully that
agree.
continues because he was pretty successful at it, even against Duke a little bit to a degree.
Yeah.
So looking at the region, Alabama's region South, they're the one seed. Obviously they're loaded, but I like Arizona a lot as far as title contenders go who are on the one line. So these are all teams really to talk about later, but anybody, any storyline in the South region before we close up about would be interesting? I mean, you got, Baylor who UVA handled earlier this year, but those teams are pretty different in both regards to
Yeah.
when they were playing. San Diego State, we can get into if Virginia does win the game. But Charleston could easily beat them in a 5-12 upset. I'm sure people are picking. Obviously, we've got old friends Maryland there as well. Utah State, coached by Ryan Odom.
Oh, yes. Oh, Jesus.
Yeah,
I did not know that. Oh, wow.
So there's a storyline there.
Former UMBC coach for people,
Yep,
yeah.
yep, yep. And the UMBC coach for people, right? And
Yeah.
NC State, I think Creighton's gonna blow NC State out of the water, but I'm often wrong. And we could see some old friends in the Wolfpack. What pick one storyline there, Zach, before we close up.
It would be really nice if UVA beat Alabama in the Sweet 16 in
Ooh,
Louisville. If in
ooh.
the camp, KFC, Preston Willett said it today before the press, before the presser, really unfair that Alabama could potentially have to play UVA at home and in the Sweet 16. So, if UVA could beat the big baddies at Alabama, get to the Elite Eight,
Wouldn't that be fun?
that would be really something. Ryan Dunn on Brandon Miller, give me that for 35 minutes. Give me Ryan Dunn shutting Brandon Miller down and then
Yeah.
leaving for the NBA as a 3-and-D prospect. Just kidding, that will not happen. Ryan Dunn is
Not this
popping up
year.
on draft boards for
No,
next
shut
year,
up. No.
which is terrifying. I don't know. I'm not really thinking about, like, I haven't thought much about the regional other than UVA getting to the Elite Eight. I mean, Charleston, I know everybody's afraid of. Like, yeah, but at the same time, as a second round opponent, doesn't really scare me. San Diego State, I honestly know like nothing about.
That's sort of like a vet team,
Yeah,
like that's gonna be no joke, but we will
I
certainly
think
be
they're
back.
capable. I mean, they're 14th on KenPom, which just if you go off KenPom,
They sort of
but
always are though, like
and
they just
they
sort of
typically
blow
have a
through
very
their
good
conference.
defense. Yeah, like I think that, gosh, I mean, do they have length? I'm pulling up KenPom now. They don't
Yeah, no,
really.
they I mean they do, like they have big athletic dudes for sure. Like it's funny when we talk about that. I know Duke's they're not Duke, but they are going to be a very different team than Furman for sure if that's who Virginia ends up playing. But we'll be back if that is the case, if Virginia
Yes.
wins. I don't know if we'll be immediately podcasting if they lose. It will be a very angry podcast where we won't talk about San Diego State or Charleston anyway, if that is the case. So if Virginia beats Furman, we'll be back before that second game to talk about the matchup with whoever it is and break down the bracket, and the game one, round one results more. Any quick final four picks before the brackets are due, Zach?
Oh
You
man.
a multi a mini bracket guy, or you a stick to one?
I just like doing one. I did one in like 5 minutes last night,
Yeah.
just and I am horrible at the brackets. Like it just it's
All
not
right.
something that I say that I'm good at. Join the Streaking the Lawn bracket. We
There we
will be
go. Yeah.
pushing that at some point and
You
you can beat me with your
can beat
bracket.
all of
You
us.
can beat all
We're
of us
all
with your
bad
bracket.
at it.
Yeah, I don't have a lot. I mean, it'd be like if it's not UVA, I'd love to see Baylor in there. I don't know. Not really. I don't like Baylor, but whatever. I
Yeah,
don't
I
know.
hate that you just
I like
said
their
that.
players. I like their players. I don't like their program. So that's
Right.
where that came from. I hope Duke loses to Oral Roberts. That would be amazing. But I think if they don't lose to Oral Roberts, they probably will go to the Final Four, which sucks, but
I think
whatever.
Alabama is going to destroy a lot of brackets. I hope that's because they're being picked so often that they do lose to UVA potentially. I'll probably pick them to get upset early and then they'll win the national title. You know, it's like whichever one I don't go with.
You were saying that in November too.
I know Alabama is just freaky. They're so up and down. They do have the best player in the country. I know I'm going to go the wrong way, so I'm going to have to submit multiple brackets to hedge myself
to counterbalance it.
All right, y'all. Thanks so much for listening. Of course, we'll have a few days more of pregame coverage for the Hoos on streakingthelawn.com. Baseball keeps winning. They beat UNC in the series this weekend, so stay tuned for more news about that. Obviously, we've got lacrosse coverage. We're like your source for lacrosse coverage, you know.
Yeah, man.
Virginia goes. So I'm sure you're already staying tuned to that. But until call it Friday morning, when hopefully we're talking about whatever second round game is ahead of us, knock on wood, no jinx. I'm Pierce for everybody at streakingthelawn.com. Go Hoos.